Gentlemen, it is a couple of days before Thanksgiving. What are you thankful for in our fandom this year?
The first thing that comes to mind was being able to interview the producer and writer and visual effects supervisor and all that for Andor. That was pretty incredible
stuff. Being a part of a live action round table for one of these well, it's a round table for a live action series.
Yes. There we go.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. What about you, Nathan?
Nate.
Yeah, his name's Nate, right?
DC had a good year.
DC had
it's unusual. Good year. I'm very thankful for that.
Dad?
It is. It's a shocker. I am thankful that after 5 years of recording these episodes, there are still a few people who want to listen.
Crazy.
Yeah. I don't understand that one, but thank you.
Same people.
Thank you for being in our Tatooine Zones family. We'll continue to do our best this week as we talk about the life and legacy of Chadwick Boseman, the impact of the death of Superman 30 years later, and the cost of the rebellion in Andor. This is Tatooine Zones.
It's true.
What is the name of the Porg on the Millennium Falcon?
Force is strong in my family.
What do you think his name is? It's a big moment.
I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
Maybe Turbis?
Do or do not. There is no try.
Turbis? Pablo, if you're listening to this live stream, that Porg's name is now Turbis. It's a good Star Wars name.
We're not done yet.
These guys recorded an awesome podcast called Tatooine Sons. Everybody was fit.
Kind of boggles my mind that about a year ago we were getting ready to board a plane to try to crash the Spider-Man No Way Home premiere in Los Angeles.
That was fun, just being able to tour LA and all of that.
Yeah. What was your favorite spot outside of that moment there at the red carpet? That, again, we didn't get into the red carpet if you're listening to us like the first time or you don't know the story. We basically went out there in hopes that we could figure out a way to get in. We didn't, but we had a great time anyway.
We did.
And we visited lots of different spots associated with Marvel and everything else. Mm-hmm. So what was your favorite locations that we went to outside of the red carpet?
I'll let you go first, Sam.
I mean, I've got like three that come to mind.
Just one, because you're going to steal one of ours.
So. You got to pick it.
Got to be the shawarma place.
From Avengers. The end credit scene.
Yeah, it was good shawarma, too.
It was good shawarma.
It was really good shawarma. Probably the location that they filmed for Iron Man's house. That was cool.
We went up there.
Was awesome. It was cold, but it was awesome to be there. That was really cool.
In Malibu, right? Mm-hmm. We went up on the hill there, on the cliffs there. That was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. It took forever to find parking.
It did.
I'm just going to be honest. I loved Randy's Donuts.
Really?
The donut place.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about donuts. Iron Man 2. How did I forget about that?
Well, I'm a donut guy. So anyway, it was fun to do that. Well, welcome. I guess we should start the show. Welcome to Tatooine Sons, a pop culture podcast. The only fan podcast to name a canon Star Wars creature and to be endorsed by the writer-director of The Last Jedi, Rian Johnson.
Cool. Hey, I'm hearing some people say, like, I think it was Screen Crush or Hollywood Reporter or something said that
very different, by the way.
I know.
Okay.
But Glass Onion is better than Knives Out.
I've heard several people say this. We believe that pop culture is the mythology of this generation, that there is a story. It is written on our souls and that these myths speak to that story. And that is why we talk about Star Wars and Marvel and DC and all of the other epic franchises that you love so much. I am David. I am the dad.
Hi, Dad.
Hello, gentlemen. I am honored to be joined every week by my two amazing sons, BB Nate. What are you talking about?
It has been a long time since Superman's Doomsday.
Yeah, I still get emotional thinking about reading that comic.
It's going to be fun.
And emotional that
I'm
you
using
don't
you
have
as a crutch this segment.
Are you going to lean on me? I don't remember the story all that much.
Well, I'm not talking about what you remember.
Oh, okay. All right. Samuel the Hutt, what do you got going this week?
Yeah, Wakanda Forever brought up some tough emotions regarding Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, great movie. Great movie the third time, second time.
Second time for me.
Yeah, with that.
Dad?
After thinking about the cost our characters in Andor have paid, I feel like we need to ask the question, is it worth it?
Yes.
So it is.
Greater good.
The greater good. All right. Yeah, we'll talk about all that. But before we do that, I want to thank you guys for listening to the show. Please follow the show on whatever podcast app that you guys are consuming our content
like Podbean
on.
Or
Podbean.
I saw that a little
Overcast.
Few days ago.
There's a bunch of them.
There's a lot of really small ones.
Yeah, all the time. There's dozens of them. It's I've awesome. Got them all on our phone.
All of them?
On
Google,
my phone.
I use Google Podcast.
I use Spotify.
I use Spotify. I've used Apple. I use them. I check them out on all the different platforms just to make sure they're working.
That's a good idea.
And to get downloads. No, I'm kidding. So, we want to make sure you guys know all about our fifth anniversary special that's taking place on Friday, December 2nd at 8 p.m. Eastern. Actually, I said 8 p.m., but I'm changing that. It's 7 p.m. Eastern.
So it's 6 p.m. here?
It's 6 p.m. here, yeah. 7 p.m. Eastern on, it's going to be on Fireside Chat, which is Mark Cuban's new streaming interactive video voice platform video. Like that. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be a special video episode. We've got about a dozen different content creators and people with that have been a part of the show over the years that are going to be a part of that, and you get to be a part of it too. So download the Fireside app on Apple if you have that. If you're on Android, I'm sorry, you can watch it on any of our platforms. You just can't interact, so I should probably just say that. I'm sorry, it's not my fault. I'm not Mark Cuban. I don't have billions of dollars, and it's not, and anyway, but yeah, download it and engage and interact with us. I just got a notification on my phone from Fireside. Yes.
Hey, would you look at that?
Isn't that interesting?
Timely.
And then there's one other thing I want to make sure you guys. So you guys kind of know that the Twitter thing. It was like there was a really real yes. concern Twitter was going to break last week because of all
fun.
The people that walked out yeah. and all of that. And it's been an interesting thing. I don't think Twitter's going anywhere, but a lot of people have made the decision to move over in the Star Wars community, move over to a different app.
I saw
and try that. It's called Hive.
I've been seeing posts about it, but I have no idea what this
and
is.
And so I went ahead and downloaded and created us an account on that. And I really like the experience.
It's Instagram mixed with Twitter.
It's basically if Twitter and Instagram had a baby.
Okay.
Isn't that Facebook basically?
No, it's very different. You would have Hive. But the thing that's been awesome about being on Hive, which we're on there at Tatooine Sons, S-O-N-S, that's why I'm bringing
hey,
it up.
Hey, you got in there early, so nobody took that handle.
Well, that's part of the reason with it. But then it's been fun because the interaction has been so pleasant. It's like everybody that moved over there are the good people in Star Wars fandom.
Awesome.
And so we've been having, it's been like Star Wars Celebration. Mm. On your phone.
That's awesome. With that.
It has. It's been awesome. So I encourage, and the interaction is cool too, because you know, you've got these major creators or people that are on there that don't have 200,000-300,000 followers. Mm-hmm. They've got a few hundred. And so their interactions are more personalized
right.
too, because you can they see your interactions
right.
and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a lot of fun.
It's
so
awesome.
I encourage you guys to check it out. We're having a great time on that. And we would love to have you follow us or whatever. I think it's I can't remember what there was like terminology regarding it, but I don't remember what it is. Anyway, just find us and hit that button. I think it's follow. So anyway, all right. Enough talking about what we're going to talk about. Let's talk about what we're talking about.
Yes, sir.
All right. BB Nate.
All righty. 30 years ago, Superman died.
It was very sad.
Well, he came back pretty soon after. It was still a shocking event and changed Superman forever. So let's talk all about what the death of Superman meant.
Have you ever danced with the devil in the pale moonlight?
Yeah. I can fly.
I'm here to fight for truth and justice in the American way.
The people in this room, which one is A, wearing a spangly outfit, and B, not of use?
There's only one God, man, and I'm pretty sure he doesn't dress like that.
That man has no limits.
After 2 weeks, I finally finished Gotham Knights like
an hour ago. Nice. What'd you think?
It was great.
Yeah?
Great.
Can you talk about the ending without spoiling it?
No.
No, I don't want to hear anything.
I can't. But
how close am I?
You are a few missions out. You're pretty close.
How close am I?
You're very far.
I've played like 45 minutes.
Yeah, you're a ways out. But great ending. Great game. I hope they make more.
All right. Well.
Yes.
When I find another 20 hours of my life, I'll figure it out. So mm-hmm. Go.
Well, let's not talk about the death of Batman anymore.
Let's talk about the death of Superman. Yeah.
So the death of Superman was a monumental event 30 years ago. And after the release of the 30th anniversary comic, that's even more apparent. Now, the new issue was fine, nothing crazy good, but it was entertaining. The first two stories were enjoyable, but the last two just kind of felt pretty off. But no matter, we are here to talk about the original
series. The original storyline? Okay, good.
The original storyline. When it started, no one expected it to be as emotional as it turned out to be. Seeing it Lois was. Holding Superman with the shredded cape in the background was heartbreaking, but also iconic. Now, Dad,
you read
the series as it came out.
I did.
What did you think of it when it was releasing monthly instead of, you know,
I remember
reading it all at once?
That was when I discovered comics came out on Wednesdays.
Not anymore.
Well, that's when they came out, though, right?
It is.
And I remember I had done comics, like, but it was my comic book experience when I would purchase them was like going to the local convenience store. I mean, it's kind of like that weird period before, like, comic book stores were there. They had them, but
after they were in like magazines, and now they kind of switched to convenience stores were the big thing and not comic book stores.
Well, I would go to the Quickway or I would go to 7-Eleven and they would have racks of them and I would purchase my comics that way. And then I had stopped sort of getting into comics for a little while.
Shame.
And then I had heard about the Death of Superman issues, and I was like, that's fascinating. Just the idea, right?
Of a superhero dying.
Of Superman dying. So there was a comic book store. It was in the Citadel Mall. You guys know that mall.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
In Colorado. It was Heroes and Dragons. I can remember exactly where it's at. And I was there 10 a.m.
Oh my gosh.
And there was a massive line waiting to get in. And I got a copy of it. I bought two copies of it. And then I remember having to wait because if I'm recalling it correctly, again, it has been 30 years,
it has.
Right? I was 17 years old at this time.
Dang. Wow. You're my age.
Which means I didn't have my driver's license yet.
What?
Because I didn't get my driver's license until I was 18. I just didn't bother to do it. So I was walking from our house. You know where Grammy lived.
That's a
to the Citadel just to get there by 10 a.m. in order to do this.
That's like you had to leave at like 8.
I mean, the story, the death issue didn't happen in the first issue.
No.
It continued for several, the battle, but Doomsday considered. And I just remember having to wait a month to get to those. And it was just miserable with it. And then they left it on cliffhangers every single time. And you just wondered where it was going to go. It was really an experience going through that.
That's
process.
What I love about comics. It's different than like TV shows. Cause you're like, okay, well I can wait a week. With comics, it's like you get an episode a month.
Yeah. I'm annoyed because the new Riddler comic is not just once a month. It's every 2 months. It's
2 months.
People
are frustrated now in our world because they've got the Netflix binge now type stuff where you can binge an entire season in a day of those shows, right? And they get frustrated that you have to wait a week between Andor episodes or a week between Rings of Power episodes or whatever.
I like that.
And so, I think that waiting for those extended periods of time with comics is really one of the things that makes comics still unique.
It
2 months
great.
Is too long though.
Well, you can wait longer from some comics. So, the death of Superman has been a staple for Superman ever since then. It's been mentioned in many forms of media. I mean, there's some great lines. I don't remember what this is from, but Batman's talking to Superman and Superman's like arguing. I think this was in Justice League Unlimited. I might be wrong. But Batman's like, the only time you truly inspired the people was when you were dead. And that it's just like it's always been a part of his character from then on. And there was even animated movies made off of it. That was almost introduced into Superman and Lois. But not quite.
They teased it a lot between seasons one and two. They made you think
that's
what was
happening.
And they
even did in like season two with the whole, it was looking like it was going to be, and then it was Bizarro, and that was just weird.
And but they kind of had it in Batman v Superman.
They did have it in Batman v Superman, but Sammy, you've seen the Death of Superman animated movie.
Yeah.
What did you think of that one?
That was a while ago.
It was. We need to watch them again.
Yeah, I don't remember it super well.
Is that part of the DC animated storyline that like we're watching together,
yes.
You and I are? Okay.
It's older, right?
No.
Or did they come out with a new one?
The Death of Superman and then the Reign of the Superman one.
I must be thinking of something older then.
You're thinking of Superman Doomsday, I think.
Which I'll mention in a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't really remember this one super well.
I guess let's watch them again.
But the storyline, at least, is super interesting. I love it. I mean, you know, this, you've got this creature who rivals that of Superman, and you know, Superman's toted it as this indestructible, for lack of a better term, god in DC, right? whose only weakness is a green glowing rock. And now you've got this creature who doesn't have a green glowing rock and is still able to hurt Superman and eventually kill him. And that's just such an interesting concept in my mind. It's like Superman isn't, you know, all powerful, isn't immortal. Like, he can be hurt. Mm-hmm. And Doomsday is such an interesting character. He looks awesome. Love it. So
he's great. But Dad, you watched the first adaptation of this storyline in animation with Superman Doomsday. Did that movie give you the same feeling as you were reading the comic series?
No, it was disappointing. It didn't.
It was
like
very disappointing movie.
It was a bunch of battles between Superman. It reduced the Death of Superman comic book arc to a bunch of battle fighting between it took the emotion of the character, the emotion of what was going on.
If I recall, they didn't have any of the Justice League in that movie.
I don't remember them being
there. They were in the original comic series.
Yeah, and they were like trying to help.
They were trying, and they got
were getting defeated. You know, they would cut to Lois. They would cut to Jimmy. They would cut to his parents. You know, all of this
The Death of Superman movie. It's so good.
And so they didn't do that in Superman Doomsday, and it took the emotion of it. You brought up that iconic scene in the comic when Lois is holding Superman's lifeless body. Mm-hmm. That scene hits as hard as it does because it's been building towards that moment. Mm. Not just let's put a battle between these monster characters with it. And I think that's the problem that I had with Superman Doomsday.
Yeah, that was
it took the emotion out of it and tried to just make it a battle movie.
It was a disappointing movie, that's for sure. And that's widely regarded a disappointing movie in fandom as well. People didn't like it. But then they came out with the new one, All Was Right Again, because
I haven't gotten a chance to see
that. That one's very good. Both of them, Reign of the Superman is good too. But there was one part of the series that was also very important to Superman, Doomsday, an instant classic villain that has been in so many things since that series.
Really?
Video games.
He's been in a lot of different things.
Oh my gosh. Like, you can play him as a character in Injustice. Like,
really?
He's been in TV shows and so much more. His intimidating presence with the sheer power that he has, he was terrifying and imposing. So, Sammy, you touched on this a little bit, but what do y'all think of Doomsday? I'll go with you first, Ed.
The thing that I remember reading the comics and thinking about Doomsday is, how can Superman defeat him? Because every time that he would injure him, Doomsday's body would come back stronger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And so it got to the point where you just like, there is no hope here. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting going back now and thinking back to 30 years later, because you knew Superman was going to die in this story. Mm-hmm. Before the story started,
right?
They had told you Superman was going to die in this, and so how do you watch a character and get invested in a storyline when you already know the outcome with it? And they did a really fantastic job of making Doomsday a terrifying villain that you felt the helplessness that at one point you're there and Superman, he understands that he's not going to win. He can't he's not going to come out on the other side of this thing like the victor, like he's used to being with it. And so you feel that emotion as you're reading it. And that's what I think makes Doomsday such a classic character.
Yeah.
I mean, this series, the Death of Superman series, is one of the best death of series that's been in comics. I mean, a bunch of companies, Marvel and DC, have tried to do this with their superheroes, and just none of them have really done as well as they did with this one. Because you have, like, the most recent one I can think of is Death of Doctor Strange, which I read. That was a very disappointing series. Mm-hmm. And because they killed Doctor Strange off in the first issue. And then the rest of the series is just trying to figure out who killed him. And then you get the reveal and you're kind of like, okay, well, he's already dead. So I had like, how am I supposed to be ready for this? And this series, like Death in the Family, really let you build to that point and like just be devastated when it happened, when Jason Todd died, when Superman died. They did a very good job. And that's something DC does very well. They
kill characters off really good, don't they?
They do. They really do. they show that their heroes can be beat, because you had Death of Superman, you had Batman Nightfall around the same time as well. Mm-hmm. And you have so many series with DC that just show all right, well, your heroes that you, you know, read and like think, oh, these people will never be able to be beaten, can be beaten, but they also can get back up. And so,
but I can't help but think about the reign of the Superman storyline when I think about the death of the Superman.
Right.
Well, yeah, they're counterparts. You know,
it's the next, it's the next phase. Mm-hmm. And I remember the hype over those four different
Superman
characters. So like, I mean, you obviously know John Henry Irons isn't Superman.
No.
Right. But you have the cyborg version, which you know, there's, you're thinking that's Superman, you know, there's moments you're like, that really could be him. And then you've got the clone version,
the boy, right.
And then you've got,
you got Superboy.
There's a clone and
there's a clone and then Superboy. Yeah.
And so you're wondering, you know, how it's all going to play out. And of course we, you know, 30 years later, I think it's okay to spoil it if you haven't read it
or seen the movie
but you know, I mean, it is literally Superman resurrects in it, just like, you know, in Justice League
and Zack Snyder's Justice League
and all of that. But but that was a fun storyline to follow.
It was
and read those characters and things, so
kept you guessing.
Lots of fun.
That's awesome. Yes, but the death of Superman was an amazing storyline and will always be a mark for Superman in his story. For good reason, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Good segment, BBJ.
Thank you. Good job.
A little slow week in DC news.
Very slow. When we get something soon, like a Shazam trailer.
Maybe,
I was going to say, maybe you could talk about Gotham Knights next week, but
you better,
we kind of want to finish it. So maybe not.
You don't want to spoil it for everybody that hasn't finished
it. Right, yeah, that's
well,
true.
Actually, we spoil everything on this. So well, anyway.
It's more for the other hosts. We don't want
that's to true. So, all right. We're heading to Coruscant for this week's Is It Canon? So we'll see if the boys can figure it out.
This is not going to go the way you think.
All right. So for those of you that may be new to the show, here's how the segment works. I go ahead and before we record, so it's not like happening right now.
How many times did it take?
It was a few this time because I wanted to find a good one. I hit the random article button on Wikipedia and then I find something I think is interesting. Could be canon.
Could be not.
Could be legends. I describe it to these kids, and they decide, they debate whether or not they think it's legends or canon.
Okay.
And then why? Are we good with that?
I think it's
pretty straightforward.
All right. This one's Coruscant City Tours.
That's got to be something from
Galaxy. Star Tours.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Star Tours.
Coruscant City Tours was an organization based out of the tourist center on Coruscant in 32 before the Battle of Yavin. Overseen by the tourist director. For the price of a ticket, a passenger could embark on a tour transport and take a famous tour of Coruscant's sites, including Monument Plaza, Kalakor Heights, the Jedi Temple, and the Senate Building. Tickets were considered difficult to obtain. Masa Maeda had a pair of these tickets, paying 100 Republic credits each for them, and then unable to use them, they were sold to Captain Panaka at half price. Canon or legend?
This sounds like something straight out of a Lego short.
It does.
I could see this in a Lego short so easy.
Like Padawan Menace or something.
Something
like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, legends or canon?
Because Lego's technically not canon.
They aren't
even
canon.
The new stuff.
So I'm going to say legends.
It sounds legends for that reason. Yeah, I think we're going to go legends.
You're going to say it's legends? And
yes.
You're going to say it's legends because it's Lego? Because
it sounds Lego. Unless it's from an RPG. But then it's
still always
legends.
Want to say it's from
well,
RPG.
There's been multiple instances when it's been from an RPG.
So what is it?
You guys
I think we're going legends.
Both of you?
Mm-hmm. I think we're going legends.
Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace video game.
Okay. Canon, though.
Right. Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace is the action-adventure video game adaptation of the Star Wars prequel trilogy film Star Wars The Phantom Menace. It was published by LucasArts Entertainment Company and developed in conjunction with Big Ape Productions. The game was released for PC on May 18th, 1999, which is before the actual release of the movie, if you think about that.
Spoilers.
And for the PlayStation on September 15th, 1999.
Very interesting.
Very interesting.
But you could see where I was going with the Lego
get it.
Thing.
I
is.
Get it. All right. Well,
interesting.
Let's keep this thing going. Samuel Hutt.
Yeah. With Black Panther, Wakanda Forever's release, it's hard to talk about the film without talking about the absence of the actor who's responsible for the success it's built on, Chadwick Boseman. And while in many ways Wakanda Forever seemed to be a remembrance of his legacy in the MCU, we want to discuss his legacy as an actor and a man today.
Be on your guard. There are older and
fouler things than orcs in the deep places of the world.
All right, then, keep your secrets.
Posthumously.
Yeah, that was awesome.
He had a ton of
which is really the last thing that he
it was
acted
in. It was the last thing he's credited with. Yep.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Pretty tough. Yeah. But let's start talking about Chadwick. You know, he seemed to choose roles that allowed him to tell an important message. You know, a lot of the movies he starred in. Including his first breakout performance as Jackie Robinson in 42. He played James Brown in Get On Up, Thurgood Marshall in Marshall, and even Black Panther had a message to tell that movie. So why did you guys think it was so important for Chadwick to tell stories with a message?
I think he wanted to be in movies that he cared about. And sometimes actors just take jobs just to have jobs, but I think he genuinely wanted to tell stories. He was a storyteller himself, and he was going to be in movies that allowed him to tell a message and allowed him to share his thoughts and share what he wanted to tell. I mean, 42 is an amazing movie, and I can't speak for these other ones, but I'm sure that they are great too. Get On Up, I saw it a few days ago and I thought, yeah, that might be a fun movie to watch at some point. But Black Panther and everything, he always put everything into the roles that he had, and you could always tell he was passionate about the movies themselves and not just being an actor. He wanted to tell a story.
It is interesting to think about outside of the Black Panther character, he seemed to sort of gravitate towards biopics with this, and I think that's because he saw his opportunity to act, and it may have come because his first big break was Jackie Robinson in 42. And that, so he sort of moved
stuck
into
what
a,
he knew.
Almost a typecast type situation. But he, all of these stories are really important stories that he told.
Lots of civil rights
and just, characters that are not just, important characters, but complex characters, James Brown being a really complicated individual and story with that. And then Thurgood Marshall, the first African-American Supreme Court justice. I mean, he goes through and is able to help modern audiences reconnect with stories from history that are important for us to be going back and reconnecting with. And so then when you move from that to Black Panther, I could see why some people might have been critical of him moving into that role. I do remember we watched a little bit of a documentary about Black Panther the other night, Nathan and I did, and he thought that it was just a cameo role in Civil War. And
really?
So he didn't think it was anything more than that.
Huh.
And
when
so
he signed up, he just thought it was going to be a cameo.
Yeah.
So.
With it. But I do think that when we get to Black Panther, that film allows a story to be told in the MCU universe that is as important in that universe as these other stories are in ours. And I think that's what makes it such a fascinating series of choices for him.
Yeah. Yeah. But on top of telling stories, Chadwick also focused on making a difference and helping those in need. He often worked at multiple cancer facilities, bringing hope and joy to the kids there as they saw T'Challa come to give them words of encouragement. What do you guys think about the fact that despite his battle with cancer, he still took time to help others going through similar experiences?
I think that yes, that's commendable and amazing that he did that. I think that the thing that makes it more amazing to me is that he was going through cancer and wasn't telling people about this. He didn't want his caring for these kids and the service that he did and all of the things he did for cancer research and everything else and working with these kids. He didn't want it to be about, oh my gosh, you know, Chadwick Boseman has cancer and look at what he's doing.
Right.
It was more about these kids. Mm-hmm. And he, you know, it would have been a different experience for these kids to be thinking about Chadwick Boseman having cancer instead of the Black Panther came to see
this strong superhero.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's one of the reasons, you know, we in that same documentary we watched, mm-hmm. we saw the interview with his wife. Mm-hmm. She's sharing, you know, stories and how hard that was for them during that time. I think it just shows a level of character within Chadwick Boseman that, you know, it's really easy to take, you know, stories of individuals within Hollywood and sort of find the everything wrong about them. Mm-hmm. I think Chadwick Boseman he's the real deal. He was who you saw. That's what integrity should be about. Integrity shouldn't be about pretending to, or trying to do the right thing because it's the right thing. It's doing the right thing because that's who you are.
Yeah.
And that's what we see with Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that him going through and helping these kids and, you know, meeting with them, it gave the kids, you know, something to look forward to, a little bit of strength in their battles. And I'm sure it gave him that too, just silently, just the will to just keep going on, like meeting these kids, seeing what they're going through. And he's like, okay, I can keep going if I'm helping these kids.
These kids are fighting the same battle that he's fighting, and they're fighting it with joy. Mm-hmm. They're fighting it with hope. And so there is an element of that, I'm sure, that Chadwick Boseman had to go through, where he was feeding off of their hope and their joy as much as they were feeding off of the Black Panther coming to visit. Yeah,
he and in the documentary that we watched, he appreciated doing those visits so much. It meant so much to him to be able to help those kids and just give them a little, something to look forward to and a little bit of joy in those times. And it just he was so appreciative of it, and it was awesome to see that. He definitely was a great guy that did that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's awesome. And it's no doubt that Chadwick left a legacy that will live on for decades to come. We can already see some of the effects he had. Howard University has named their College of Fine Arts after Chadwick Boseman, actually. And his portrayal of Black Panther has inspired many kids to reach for the stars and become whatever they want to be. And sadly, while T'Challa?
T'Challa did.
Yes. Yeah. But while Chadwick didn't have any children, his memory will live on, at least in the MCU, through T'Challa's son. What kind of legacy do you think that Chadwick will be known for going forward?
It's going to be hard. Hard to say, because in some ways, while Black Panther is an amazing character, I, you know, you can't tell the story of the MCU without that, and you'll never think of the MCU without thinking about Chadwick Boseman. Mm-hmm. I fear that Black Panther will now overshadow his other work. And I think that, you know, we need to make sure, if you're a fan of the Black Panther films and you're a fan of Chadwick Boseman's characterization of T'Challa, and you haven't seen, you know, these other films, we need to go back and we need to watch a couple of them ourselves. Of course. But I want you to make sure you spend some time, you know, watching some of his other films, and because those stories are true stories and they're real and they're important stories. And so
they're important to him too.
And they were important to him as well. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I think that his legacy will be felt. And I mean, even in that documentary, his wife was talking about, you know, they didn't have any children, but the people that he helped support through the Fine Arts Center, mm-hmm. through Howard University and the Chadwick and his commencement of that, and now everything, he's like, those are his children now. Those are his legacy. Those kids will be who he is now. And so, because they are who he was, you know, actors striving, going to Howard University, going to the Fine Arts program, they're his, who he was at that time going into this new world. And so, yeah, he's going to leave a big legacy, and we already felt it now. Yeah.
You know, you've asked us a lot about our thoughts on Chadwick Boseman, but Sam, what are some of your thoughts on him as you process, you know, all of the things that you were thinking about as you prepared for this segment?
Yeah. I mean, I already knew he was a pretty stand up, stand-up guy, you know, for lack of a better term. But upon researching it and realizing, no, he really was just a good, kind guy who never wanted, you know, a pity party. That's a kind of a
he didn't want anybody to feel sorry for him.
Yeah, no, he, you know, up until his passing, he hardly told anyone of his illness. He kept working because he knew how important it was and what an impact it made on everybody. It's just so commendable. I mean, you hear, like you said, Dad, about a lot of the bad stuff in Hollywood, because there's a good bit of it. But occasionally, you know, you see stuff like this and you see actors that arise who are like this, and you're like, okay, maybe it's not all bad.
And that's kind of what makes his passing so much harder to swallow, because he was one of the good guys with it. Yep. So.
Yeah. It was difficult to watch Wakanda Forever and not tear up for the loss of Chadwick. And while he'll always be missed, there is some comfort in knowing that he's had a massive impact and has left a legacy that will live on long after we're gone.
Yeah, absolutely. Good segments. That'd be good. Thank you, Sam. Yeah, I appreciate that. I said that was fun to have a chance to talk about him and celebrate his life with that. That's awesome. All right, well, let's move forward. Thanksgiving weekend has historically been big at the box office.
Really?
Oh, yeah, it's a big weekend for movies usually. Is this the weekend that the cinema puts the pandemic behind it? We'll talk about that next on Movie Moments.
At last, we will reveal ourselves to the Jedi. At last, we will have revenge.
All right, for the first new release, Devotion, an aerial war epic based on the best-selling book of the same name. It tells the harrowing true story of two elite U.S. Navy fighter pilots during the Korean War. Their heroic sacrifices would ultimately make them the Navy's most celebrated wingmen. Did that just spoil the movie?
No, I think everybody pretty much knew that was going to happen.
It's like the Titanic, Nate.
The director is J.D. Dillard. The cast is Christina Jackson, Glenn Powell, and Jonathan Majors. The studio is Sony Pictures, and it is rated PG-13 for strong language, some more action, violence, and smoking. Going yes or no?
I want to see it.
I wanted to see it from the first trailer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we have a lot of movies we need to go see.
I did want to see it, not just for the amazing, you know, story and everything else, but because J.D. Dillard was doing it and he was supposed to be doing a Star Wars movie, but that got canned. So but I definitely want to go see it. I guess, you know, you've got the guy, what's his name,
Glenn Powell.
Mm-hmm. You know, I guess that he's gonna get typecast as fighter pilot
now,
because he was in Top Gun Maverick.
He'll probably be in another Top Gun if they make one.
It's the year of Jonathan Majors.
Yeah,
for real.
Creed, Ant-Man, Quantum.
And this, I'm Quantum sure Mania, there's going to be more stuff that he's in.
I bet you he's not sad.
He is not, so, no.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see that. Yeah, I definitely want to try to go to that.
Loki.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next one, Strange World. The legendary Clades are a family of explorers whose differences threaten to topple their latest and most crucial mission. Director is Don Hall. The cast is Jake Gyllenhaal, Dennis Quaid, Jabuki Young White.
You got it.
Gabrielle Union, Lucy Alexis Liu.
Why did they decide to throw her middle name in on this one, I wonder? Lucy Liu.
I don't know.
Wait.
Maybe she got married.
I didn't even realize it was Lucy Liu.
Maybe she got married and wanted to, like, keep his last name, but also put in her own last name.
I don't know. I just thought that was
the
weird.
Studio is Disney. It is rated, of course, it's Disney. It is rated PG for action, peril, and some thematic elements. Going yes or no?
Not sure yet.
Yeah, we're kind of deciding.
It's kind of, you know, we'll check it out.
Yeah,
there's a lot of movies we want to see.
There's a lot of movies we want to see. This next one. Gosh, there are so many movies this weekend. Bones and
this is what I'm talking about.
Bones and All, a story of first love between Marin, a young woman learning how to survive on the margins of society, and Lee, an intense and disenfranchised drifter. A liberating road odyssey of two young people coming into their own, searching for identity and chasing beauty in a perilous world that cannot abide who they are.
I was hoping this was going to be some cool, like, crime thriller
thing. I was thinking, like, a Mad Max post-apocalyptic.
That's not what he did.
That's not at all. That seems way lame. Like, they need a less cool title.
Yeah. The director's Luca Guadagnino. I'm sorry. I was just sounding it out. The cast is Taylor Russell and Timothy Chalamet.
Hey, Timothy Chalamet.
Yeah, it's Paul. The studio is United Art. artist. Yes, is rated R for strong, bloody, and disturbing violent content. Dang. Language throughout some sexual content and brief graphic nudity. Heck no, we are not.
This is not on our list.
I don't think
we have so many other things that we need to go see.
That one will not.
And like this next one. The Fablemans, a deeply personal portrait of 20th century American childhood. Steven Spielberg's The Fablemans is a coming of age story about a young man's discovery of a shattering family secret and exploration of the power of movies to help us see the truth about each other and ourselves.
This so is like right up our alley.
I still haven't seen a trailer.
You need to.
You've never seen the trailer for this yet?
Y'all keep talking about it all the time, and I don't even know what it's about.
When we went to Avatar, I think.
I've seen it like three times.
I've never seen it.
I've only seen it once, and it was just when we went to Avatar.
Wow.
Okay. The director is, of course, Steven Spielberg, who said this is kind of just
Swan Song?
A memoir of his childhood. So the cast is Michelle Williams, Paul Dano.
There we go.
Riddler. Seth Rogen, a little strange. Gabrielle LaBelle, Julia Butters. The studio is Universal. It is rated PG-13 for some strong language, thematic elements, brief violence, and drug use. Going yes or no?
Yeah, I want to absolutely go see this.
For sure.
It looks fantastic.
Whenever we get the chance to watch all the other movies that we watch.
That one's creeping up to the top.
It is, but we got to find a way to get down, drive an hour to where the
we've done it before.
So yes, this is true.
For trailers. Comic books. All right.
For trailers this week.
Yeah, all right.
This first one.
Inside?
Is that the one with Willem Dafoe?
It is.
Yeah. What did you think about that, BB Nate?
Whew. That looks weird, twisted, freaky, but very intriguing. Right, and like I can't
quick like
okay.
What's it
so
about?
Willem Dafoe plays an art thief who goes into a top security room to steal a bunch of art from this person's penthouse. Right. The alarm goes off, locks him inside, and eventually starts turning up the temperature super fast, turning off all water, and he's stuck inside there and he can't get out. And then he goes crazy.
I don't think that sounds interesting.
The trailer looks good. What do you think, Dad?
Interesting.
I didn't watch the trailer.
You've
got to
watch the trailer. You got to watch the trailer.
You're the trailer guy.
So. Yeah, we'll watch that later. But yeah, the next one, Puss in Boots: Last Wish. It looks the same. I mean,
the trailer.
Yeah, like it's about what you'll expect.
I did not realize that the first Puss in Boots was nominated for the Oscar.
It was for best animated.
Really?
Film.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember liking the movie, but
it wasn't that good.
And so that's why I'm kind of like, maybe I need to rethink this. But every time I see a trailer, I'm like,
just like it looks okay.
Yeah,
I like the animation style they went with.
Yeah,
this
that's
time.
True. It looks
good.
Cool.
It does look good. But for box office results this weekend, Black Panther still strong. 67 million with 546 million worldwide.
That's Marvel for you.
Good job.
Yeah, very strong.
It's not surprising. For number two, The Menu with 9 million domestic. Pretty standard
for
yeah, I think it was the right weekend for them to pick that.
It's pretty standard for a Searchlight Pictures movie. In third place, The Chosen, season 3, episodes 1 and 2 with 8 million domestic.
They released that in theaters and it did well.
Huh, that's awesome.
I think that's great. We've never seen a single episode of the show.
Nope.
I'm not really sure I want to.
Me neither.
Yeah. Anyway, I mean, it's weird. I know most people that are listening to this show that know that we're Christians.
We're probably going
to
be like, thinking,
why didn't you, aren't you excited?
We've tried. Mom tried to watch the
I've
first
read the real story.
Like,
right.
You know, I don't know if I want to.
I don't need an adaptation.
I've got people that are like all the time, friends that are like, you've got to check it out. No, trust me, you're going to love it. And then I come back and then I'm just like, I just don't want to watch it.
But right. I know. I get it.
Not that we haven't even guessed the story, obviously.
No, I kind of like Jesus.
I've got my
own headcanon around him right now, I guess. I don't need their headcanon around it. Okay.
You talk with a British accent?
I guess not. Exactly. That is one of the most annoying things about most adaptations of the Bible is everybody's got a British accent. So anyway, it's my turn.
It is your turn.
All right. Episode 11 of Andor sees our major characters all being faced with a critical question. What are you willing to sacrifice?
Hokey religions and ancient weapons are no match for a good blaster at your side, kid.
Rebellions are built on hope.
Force is with me, and I am with the Force.
If you live long enough, you see the same eyes in different people.
All right, so there's two things that happen in the opening sequences of this episode
this
movie? It's not a movie. I want to make this a movie every time.
You really thought it was a movie.
I really remember when I thought it was a movie, and I was like, you guys got to see
Star Wars on the big screen.
Coruscant on the big screen. Yeah. And it was like, not on the big screen.
It was not. I mean, we have a pretty good sized television, but that's not the same.
But there were two things. First of all, one of the aliens in the opening sequences was
the snot alien things.
Yeah, was portrayed by Mike Quinn.
Yeah.
Mike Quinn did Nine Numb. In Return of the Jedi and all this. This is his first on-screen Star Wars speaking credit.
That's awesome.
In history.
That's
and
so cool.
I was congratulations, Mike, for that. Second thing is I was super pumped. I don't know why I'm still so excited about this, but I'm super pumped that we got to see a quad jumper flying.
Yes. Right. Thank you.
That was
and
awesome.
It was still a piece of junk even back then.
It was. I'm like, and so my headcanon has that ending up on Jakku, and that was the one.
That makes sense to me.
With that. So let's talk a little bit about some of these characters because the idea of loss and sacrifice in this this series and this episode specifically, it seems like they were the last couple episodes seem to be coming together for me. And it was something that my head started to wrap around as I was preparing for this episode. So we know that eventually Cassian is going to end up sacrificing everything.
Spoilers
for the rebellion.
Hey.
Obviously there's a really powerful moment at the end of this episode that foreshadows the end of Rogue One. What did you guys think when he was standing there on the beach looking off?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Come on. They lingered on that for a little bit too long.
Oh man.
Why you gotta do that to me?
Yeah. But I don't think that Cassian's really at the point where he's sacrificing for the rebellion yet. What's interesting to me about Cassian at this point in his story is that he's lost pretty much everything, but it's all been while he's basically looking out for himself. He's going after, like, trying to get off Ferrix, to get money, to go to and live on prison. The beach, to get out of prison, you know, and it's always
to get back to
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So Nate, has Cassian done anything noble in this entire season?
Not really. I mean, he's really just been about himself, and even when he, you say, got frustrated and killed the dude. Cypher, I don't remember his actual name.
Yeah.
Even then, it was just because he didn't like where it was going, and technically, he did help.
It wasn't noble by any means.
But it wasn't noble.
No.
It was.
That's like the closest thing you can get. And then, even, and the prison break, I guess. But
it was still
then,
looking
was
out for himself.
So, yeah, he hasn't really done anything textbook noble yet. But then again, at the beginning of Rogue One, he does shoot a guy because he can't climb out.
I know. It's really noble. It's like Cassian's a dark character.
I don't think his character arc is finished by the time we get to Rogue One. There's still a lot of development. I mean, he was about to kill
Galen.
I don't know how I was forgetting that. That's okay. I was about to start.
By the way, just one moment. Lars Mikkelsen.
Yes, that's Galen, who I was about to say.
Did you guys see the picture of him from Indiana Jones 5?
He's an Indian.
Yeah.
What?
Do you think he's playing the Nazi dude?
Is
he looks just like him. He looks just like the Nazi dude from Raiders of the Last Ark.
He's 100% playing. They're going to
die?
And then this is like what, set in the 60s or something? What is it set?
Yeah. New York in the 60s.
It looks so good.
Okay. Anyway.
On another
note. Anyway, you know, he was about to kill him. That's also not very noble. So I don't think we're going to see him become this heroic character, even by the end of season two. We've definitely seen improvements throughout this show, right?
But he's never done anything noble.
No, but you can tell he's starting to ponder things differently, think about things a little differently. But he is still for himself, largely.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think that, you know, we've got to remember that this is still 4 years plus before Rogue One.
Exactly.
We're still the very, like, the first 20% of the story arc that we're going to get for him with this. And of course, we haven't seen the finale hasn't been released yet, so people haven't been able to process that.
He's totally the Nazi guy.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
I just looked. I mean, I know his face 100%. Got melted, but he's possessed by a demon or something. I don't know.
Maybe he had plastic surgery.
Yeah.
And he's the same.
It's anyway, so but it looks like him.
Anyway,
I'm so sorry, all of you listeners, that we are so.
We're just excited.
We have ADD sometimes, and
hey, we're excited about Indiana Jones.
We are
finally so good.
We got to talk about it, but you know, it just didn't feel right. It feels too early to talk about it.
Right.
Like, I still need to watch
Six pictures.
You've seen it.
All right.
I don't remember it.
All right. Let's talk about Luthen Rail. Oh my gosh!
His awesome ship.
Yes. Well, okay. So just go ahead and geek out. Go.
That ship's so cool.
We saw it in the trailers.
I don't remember seeing that.
Yeah, we did see it in trailers. We saw the little.
The question is. Is it cooler than the Falcon?
No. Not even close. I'm going to kick you out of the family.
Does the Falcon have lasers?
All right, and this is the last episode of Tatooine Sons.
Before the
will be Tatooine Sun.
I'm willing going forward. To say it's cooler than Slave One. It doesn't look cooler, but it is.
All right.
Okay, let's do this. Let's make a compromise.
Okay.
Luthen's ship is cooler than the Falcon, but not nearly as iconic.
Well, yeah, no, nothing's going to be as iconic as the Falcon.
Nothing will touch the coolness of the Falcon, but the awesomeness of Luthen's, the
I don't
shock.
See the Falcon having, like,
y'all
like anti-tractor beam stuff. That would have helped a lot in episode 4,
feeling this right now, so let's
move
forward. The lasers,
it was like Iron Man. All right. You remember how he had those lasers?
This is my segment. This is my segment, and I'm about ready to stop the show right now. So, all right, let's talk about Luthen. I have a feeling I'll be wearing a Millennium Falcon shirt tomorrow, Justin.
Hey, that's all right. I'm not saying the Falcon's not cool.
We're going to have a conversation after the show
tonight. It's just like, this is like James Bond.
Now they're doing
car.
This just to egg
I'm not doing
me
anything.
On. Sam is doing this to egg
a
me
A little
on.
Bit.
A lot.
I'm just wanting to get forward.
I want to move forward. Luthen Rail's sacrifice in this. I think his is fascinating because in his conversation with ISB officer, what was his name? Lonnie Jung. He claims that he's lost everything in that. And this is contrasted by, you know, the appearance there. He has all of his wealth. He has all of his status with it. But he seems to have everything working in his favor. And yet he claims, or he feels like he's given up everything, maybe because he's given up who he is at his core in order to build this rebellion. I'll let you redeem yourself, Sam.
Oh, okay.
All right. We're not talking about the Millennium Falcon anymore. Luthen talks about basically losing his soul in the cause of the rebellion. And we usually see the rebellion as kind of being honorable, right? We talked about that with Cassian a little bit because they're on our side of the fight. They're our team, right? We're rooting for the good guys, right? Rogue One began by showing us, like you were talking about with Cassian, that isn't always the case. So my question is the kind of sacrifice that Luthen talks about at the end of episode 10, is that kind of sacrifice for the rebellion worth it?
I mean, it's kind of the whole question, like, do the ends justify the means? You know, ethical dilemma. And I mean, of course, I'm inclined to say, yeah, because ultimately it's for the better. Obviously, the Empire's horrible. This entire series has been showing that the Empire's horrible. But that doesn't mean that maybe there's a better way to go about it to where you don't have to, like, you know, lose your sense of self and your soul. So I don't know. It's kind of one of those, just those ethical like questions that have been pondered for hundreds of years. Now I'm not going to be able to answer it in a 15 minute podcast segment, but I feel like sometimes sacrifices are necessary. I mean, you look at the real world, and I'm certain you look at some wars in history, like the American Revolution and stuff like that. And I guarantee you there's some not pretty stuff that they don't put in the children's history books, you know? So I think it's kind of a necessary evil in some ways.
Yeah. I think that sacrifice, as we've talked about, is a big deal. And it has been in this. And Luthen understands that. He understands that he has to sacrifice, but eventually there will be good that comes from it. And he even says that in his speech from the last episode. He says, you know, I fight for a day, for a sunrise I'll never see.
And so that's such a powerful line.
Yeah, he understands that he'll never be able to see a world where the rebellion wins. But he knows that whatever he has to do in this moment will help others be able to see that sunrise, be able to see that world. And he wants them to be able to feel that instead, which is noble. That's noble right there. But he's very all into the rebellion in this, like Cassian. He's basically what Cassian becomes later on, just in this moment.
Right.
He's all bought in. But Yeah, Luthen is an awesome character. I hope we see more of him.
We will, I'm sure of that.
Oh yeah,
you know it reminds me of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, if you're not familiar with him, he was one of the greatest theologians of the 20th century. He was a German, and he was a pacifist. Mm. He built his entire framework of Christian faith and practice, the way he lived, off the Sermon on the Mount. And and he was passionate about that. And, you know, in the Sermon on the Mount, it talks about turning the other cheek and praying for your enemy. And so he became a pacifist. Mm-hmm. And then he kept seeing and hearing and learning more during the Nazi regime living in Germany about what was happening to the Jewish people. Mm-hmm. And the more he learned about it, the more he struggled
with
pacifism, down to the point where he became part of the conspiracy to assassinate Adolf Hitler.
Dang.
And he had to reconcile that sometimes you have to do things for the greater good in this situation, but it should never be an easy decision.
Right.
With that. And I think that's really kind of the same type of thing that's going on with Luthen Rail. Mm-hmm. I think it's fascinating with it. Then we have Bix Colleen. We see her. Yeah. She's caught up in this rebellion. She knows what she's part of. I think she seems to have understood the risks, but at this point in the story, she's lost her lover, Tim Carlo, the guy that betrayed Cassie and then got himself killed in the process. Don't
kind of can't say don't I'm do sad. That.
Yeah.
Goes on to lose her mind basically because of the horrific torture techniques of the Empire with this. Nate, do you think that Bix and others like her truly understood the risks they were taking when they became part of the rebellion?
No, I felt like they didn't like the Empire and, you know, we're going to do things against them, but I don't think they fully understood the consequences that could be from that. And I think that the Empire showed who they really were, and I feel terrible for the people that had that happen. And we see it all the time in these stories, and it's awful. I mean, we see, you know, like Kashyyyk in Fallen Order and the Empire is dealing with that. And it's really just horrible. And none of those people, I'm sure, really knew what they were getting into when they got into the rebellion. Bix surely didn't. I mean,
yeah, it reminds me of Luke Skywalker in A New Hope. And he's like, oh, you've heard of the rebellion against the Empire? Like, woohoo, let's go join the rebellion. And this is like, no, this is war.
Right.
You hear stories. I hear stories of, you know, kids who join the military. And let's be honest, sometimes war is it gets romanticized.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
I mean, especially with a lot of like modern games and stuff too. It's very much romanticized. And kids are like, oh yeah, I'm going to go fight for my country, which is absolutely honorable, totally respect it. But they don't realize the real sacrifice that comes with it and how gruesome war really is. I'm not speaking from experience. Obviously, I have no idea, but I've heard stories about it. And that's very similar to here. I mean, they have absolutely the right motive. The Empire is horrible. They need to stop it. They want to stop it. And they're willing to sacrifice some stuff. But I don't think they realized just how far they were going to have to go for this cause.
Well, and then you throw in the fact that not only is it sort of romanticized, but I think about like in our real world with 9/11 and sort of the aftermath of that. I mean, one of my best friends from growing up, he joined the military, he joined the army, and he was in Afghanistan, and he saw things. I remember having a dinner with him in Oregon several years ago when we were up in Seattle. I'd driven down into Oregon to have dinner with him because he was in the area, and that's the first time we'd ever really talked about what he'd gone through. And he was, you know, crying at this dinner and talking about the horrors that he'd seen. And then thinking about the fact that he's telling me the story of, you know, he was responsible for when people got to leave to fly back, like putting them on the airplanes and shipping them out and the schedules for that. And he was scheduled to leave on Christmas Eve to fly home from Afghanistan, and he changed the schedule for a close friend of his so his friend could fly home and make it home by Christmas. And then he was going to come home the next day with it. And as the plane took off, it was shot down by a Stinger missile that had been sold to the Afghans Afghanis, Taliban, you know, years earlier by the United States, and ironically, and they took it out, and his best friend in the military was killed, and it was his fault, and him having to live with that. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that happens all the time. That's why, you know, you can't mock PTSD and the things that people come back from these conflicts facing. It's terrible. And I think Bix kind of, to me, sort of personifies that type of a person in this story.
I mean, if you think about it, she wasn't even really that involved in the rebellion. She just kind of brokered some deals. I mean, that's it. And look at what happened to her.
Exactly. And then, of course, we've got Mon Mothma. And she kind of appears to have sacrificed nothing but credits. All the way going back to the 15 years since the fall of the Republic happened and the rise of the Empire. But she's still got her title. She still has her status. She still has her influence to an extent. She's losing that because she's losing credibility in the Senate. But at this point in the story, she's being asked to sacrifice something infinitely more important than all of those. Her daughter, Leda. Sam, is that a line that Mon Mothma should cross for the rebellion?
Oh, man. I mean, again, it's like, you know, it's for the good reasons. But at this point, I kind of want to say no, because it's not your life you're making the decision with. You know, this is affecting somebody else's life. You're making the decision for them at this point. While with Luthen, that was his own morals and his own decisions he had to live with. So I feel like, and it was also, I mean, yeah, it's just money, but money causes a lot of problems, both in Star Wars and the real world.
More problems.
Right. Thank you, Nathan. But I feel like there are other ways to get around this. Like, it's just money. You can
like
figure.
Her freaking cousin, Vel, who apparently has
money. No, but Vel, I don't think you picked up on this in this last episode. She rejected her status. She rejected, I think she's lost all of her money. I think she's rejected all that when she moved in. She has nothing.
Then that's a continuity error with the last episode.
No.
Okay. But I'd say that she shouldn't cross this line because it's her child. And no matter how much of an angsty teenager she is, and how much she just rebels against her mom, it's still her child. And that's something that would break Mon if that had to happen, more than it would be worth for the rebellion at that point, because you don't know what could happen to the rebellion if Mon's broken like that because of losing her daughter. And so I'd say no, she shouldn't cross that line. But then again, the rebellion has to have these funds, and so it's she's in between a rock and a hard place.
Well, it's not even that they've already got the funds. The funds are missing from Mon Mothma's account, and she's going to be exposed, which is going to open.
She's exposed, and that's Luthen's exposed.
Exactly. And so the whole thing is, it's like a domino effect is going to happen with this. I don't think she should cross the line, but I also don't know that she won't. And from one, it's a storytelling aspect or story element aspect. We don't know of her daughter any point in the future, her daughter or her husband after this series. This was all
happy family
new of this. Am I the only one that's starting to like think of maybe Mon Mothma is so, because in the story going forward, especially the novels, we read Bloodlines and some other stuff.
Gosh, yes. Mm-hmm.
The relationship between Mon and Leia is super tight. The name is almost the same. Now, don't get weird. I'm not going to like make them the same person. I'm not. Okay. The name is almost the same, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're also the same age, roughly.
At this point, yeah. Yeah, 15.
Leia's like 14 right now, and her daughter, and Leda is 13 in the story.
Okay, yeah.
Basically the same age. They look similar, all of this. Do you think that something's going to happen with Leda that's going to cause Mon Mothma to then latch on to Leia almost as a surrogate daughter because of that?
Because she knows Bail very closely in the movies we see later. And so she knows Leia. And so, like, like kind of in like an aunt role, probably.
Yeah. Just or
like
godmother.
A godmother or something, just probably, and feels that pain. I don't know. We'll see. It's going to be, it's going to be tough. It's, of course, it's dark as ever because that's what this show wants
to be.
It sure
is. It's definitely been a different experience.
Discussions, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. And that's what we love about this. Let's talk a little bit more about that in a dad moment.
I am your father.
Nearly every one of our characters have lost a great deal in the fight against the Empire. They're being asked to sacrifice everything for a fight at this point that they simply, I don't think they believe that they can actually win.
No.
With this. And all of them seem to have regrets about the things that they've lost. And it reminds me of what an ancient Jewish rabbi once talked about when he said that we have to count the cost. He said that you can't begin building a tower and then run out of materials halfway through. He said that you need to take time to think about what it's going to take to finish the job. And then he said that being his student or his disciple was just like that, that all who would follow him should count the cost. If we're ever going to be a part of something meaningful, it is going to cost us. And the question that we have to ask ourselves is the same that these characters in Andor need to be asking. Is it worth it? And so think about that, you know, as you think about things that are important to you. So, and with that, so the final episode of Andor releases tomorrow.
Yeah. That's crazy. People are so fat. It felt,
and then
it
it's going to
so
be like probably what, a year and a half to,
at least
before
yeah.
we get it again. We can't say much about that episode other than you're going to want to watch it.
Of course.
Yep.
Wow. Yes. Fantastic ending to the show. All right. That's going to do it for that part of it. I guess
good segment.
Yeah. Good. Thank you guys. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
Anything else?
Yeah. Chris Hemsworth is taking time off. He discovered that he has a genetic predisposition for Alzheimer's disease. So he's just going to simplify things.
That's what he said. Yeah.
Which I respect that. Take your time to.
He
to
said he kind of wants to close the book on Thor as well. He's like,
I don't blame
I'm kind of, yeah, kind of past that point.
I don't
but DC announces year long storyline Dawn of DC.
It's supposed to be following up the Crisis, right?
Following Dark Crisis and Leviathan Planet, which is coming out pretty soon here, which is following something else, which I haven't read.
Have you finished Dark Crisis? Have you?
They have one issue left.
Okay.
But it's great. And I'm excited. It's going to be awesome that we're. This is definitely going to be like the rebirth and a new 52 rebirth and all that stuff.
That's
so
cool.
It's going to be the next era of DC, which
very
is great.
Cool. Very cool. There's a rumor out. It seems to be getting confirmed by different sources that Star Wars Jedi Survivor release date will be revealed in December along with a new trailer.
Nice. Let's go.
It's going to release in March like everything else.
Yeah, exactly. with that, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to Tatooine Sons of Pop Culture Podcast. We appreciate it.
Yes. If you had a good time listening, it would be awesome if you could share this with friends and family.
Please.
And all those people.
Please. All right.
And of course, the show is only a small part of the Tatooine Sons world. So be sure to like us on Facebook, join the Facebook discussion group, and follow us on Twitter to get
and on Hive
and Hive
and Hive now
Hive now at Tatooine Sons, all the same. And keep up to date with everything we got going on at TatooineSons.com.
That's right. Don't forget to follow the show on your favorite podcast app so that you don't miss our next episode. And then give us a review on Apple Podcast or Spotify or whatever podcast app you prefer. Like you said, there's like 940. Mm-hmm. You can't do a review on Hive.
What?
It's not a podcast app.
I mean, you could like tweet. Oh my gosh, or tweet. Hi, tweet. Buzz.
Hi, buzz.
I don't know what they call it.
We're gonna call it Buzz.
I gotta figure it out.
You could buzz. Yeah, sting. I don't know something that has a negative
content. Anyway,
you could buzz about Tatooine Sons and be like, "They're great. I love them."
That you could.
We would count that.
We
as
would be honored, and we would reciprocate if we've listened to your show. So if you want us to, we'll send it.
If
to
you
us.
Have a show,
that's
if
right.
Not, we'll just say
if
you're
not,
a cool
we'll
dude
just, you're awesome.
Or lady.
That's right. All right.
All right.
And happy Thanksgiving.
Yes. Happy Thanksgiving.
I hope you have. If you are in, I guess it's more of a United States
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Since it's got to do with pilgrims and stuff like
right,
that.
Right. You know. Our, yeah.
You know. We hope you have an amazing Thanksgiving.
Yes.
And if it's just another Thursday for you,
have a good Thanksgiving. Have a good Thursday anyway.
So, yes. With that, and anything else you guys would like to say?
May the force be with you.
May the force be with you.
May the force be with you always.
This party's over.
I like that Wookiee.
Don't get technical with me.
Joy, please. Yep.